Hey guys, it's me, the newbie podcaster that has no idea what she's doing at any time. So there might have been a little goof on my part of the story. So if you notice that Hope is a little less interactive, don't blame her. So enjoy, and I hope that you are glad that I kept all some real gems of loops so that it does seem like Hope's here while I'm telling my story. Don't worry, though. You'll be sure to hear my wheezes during her story. Enjoy!
I hate when people say Netherlands, because it makes...
Nether regions. Netherlands is a place. Nobody says that.
People do say Netherlands.
No, they don't.
Okay, well, they say Nether regions, and it makes me think of the Netherlands. And if I was the Netherlands...
I'd be mad as crap. I'm not your crotch! I don't know why... But my anxiety has been through the roof this week.
Really?
Yeah. And so I've had podcasts on because that's like one of my calming mechanisms.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like I like to have something on. But I don't know. I can't. It's like, what's wrong with me? I can't remember what I've listened to all week.
What's wrong with me?
So I know that I've listened to a lot of old episodes of And That's All We Drink that I listened to during bar prep that I didn't really pay attention to.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think I'm doing the same thing because I don't remember any of them still.
Oh.
And I've listened to a couple episodes of Serial Killers on podcast.
Oh, I need to try that. I need to try that. I really like that.
I really want to find a podcast that's not about murder to see if the anxiety goes down.
Yeah.
But I'm like... I know the ones that I'm like, this is too graphic, I can't handle this right now, it's going to make me more upset.
Yeah.
But then there's ones like My Favorite Murderer and Crime Junkie and ones like that I'm like, yeah, I have a bond with the host that like they calm me down, their voices are soothing to me.
Yes, yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, I would agree.
So I don't know. I sound like a nutball. I'm not. I don't know.
We know what you mean, Jean.
I'm just kind of stressed out because like whenever like...
I can't, like, move. My body is, like... I think my pants, like, don't like to slide again.
What have you been binging?
Wine
and Crime.
Wine and Crime. I am almost out of 2019, so I'm at, like, 120 now.
See, I need to find something that goes that far back because I've heard everything about everything already.
Have you done Wine and Crime?
No. I just can't. I don't like their accent. I'm sorry. I know that's mean.
It's so funny. And I think they're hilarious. And I also think it's hilarious that you say that.
Because people hate mine, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, no, it's just there. It's very different.
If you listen at time and a half, you don't get that.
I was going to tell you, I had to listen to a podcast at time and a half this week because I was like, I'm going to literally hit my head against the wall if I have to listen to this man talk this slow this time. And I also noticed... I don't like to listen to mid-podcasts.
Yes, I was literally just thinking about this, because sometimes, like...
They're not at all.
They're not good. Like, even the one, like, You Should Know This.
Stuff You Should Know. Shut up. They're kings. I love them.
I mean, yeah, but...
I love the sound of Jersey. Jerseys. I hate myself. Okay, sorry. I love the sound of Josh's voice, because it's so funny, because he's like, ooh, and then we...
Do research.
That's literally... I listened to them today. I guess I binge them, kind
of. Yeah.
I love him. I think he's so funny.
I know.
You don't like them?
No.
I just listen
to them when I'm falling asleep. I don't know. I'm just not that into it. Plus, I don't listen to every single episode. So.
They're the ones that, like, made me like podcasts.
Oh, really?
I listened to a podcast about feral children while I was cleaning my bathroom one time, and I was like... Wow, I kind of like this podcast thing.
Yeah, I think I'm hip to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually here for, like, the podcast boom. I mean, yeah, like, I have to be careful because, like, I'm still consuming media, even though it's, like, not to my face. But
you're talking about podcasts?
Yeah. But, because sometimes I'll be like, oh, I'm just going to empty the dishwasher, go ahead and turn on a podcast. Like, it's going to take me 5 minutes to do that. I do not need to do that.
I'm like that, too. I'm pretty dependent on him at this point.
Yeah, I just have to balance between, like, not being overstimulated, but also at the same time, like, it makes me laugh and it makes me happy. Like,
is that a thing, being overstimulated?
Yeah.
What does that mean, that you rely on outside stimulation?
No, it just means, like, if there's a lot going on, like, sometimes you don't need, like, background music or people talking or...
Oh, no, my brain does.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
I don't know.
It means that or stimulant, one or the other.
Good times.
Yeah, I don't know. That, see, I think, I don't know. It might be an ADHD thing, but I think when your brain's already on overdrive and you're thinking really fast and you're anxious and you're like, oh, God, I have to do this next. Did I do that? I forgot to click that button. I have to. It mellows you out.
Yeah, that's true.
But if you're somebody that's maybe, I can't imagine them there, but already normal speed, maybe it would be too much all the time.
Yeah, and I don't know. But also, it might be different. Like, obviously, ADHD for everyone is different, and that's also, like, what makes it tricky. But, like, my friend who has it, like, pretty bad, he can't, like, or not as much now, but, like, he used to not be able to, like, go in restaurants that were really crazy and busy. Like, you know, like, TGI Fridays, that sort of scene.
Like, they trigger anxiety for him?
Yeah.
Just he can't pay attention because everything's going on.
Right, he can't pay attention because everything's going on, and then he gets mad because he couldn't pay attention. So then it's, like, a spiraling thing.
I do that when I'm, like, okay, so I don't drink. I, like, never have, but obviously, like, in college and in law school, like, my friends for their birthday would want to go to bars, so, like, I would go with them. And bars are already, like, over the top and, like, loud, and I have, like, an hour maximum limit. And
I don't blame you.
It's too much. Mm-mm. It just wears me out.
Yeah.
Because you're trying
to keep
up.
I can't make it to two. After this pandemic, I'm going to start going to bars at 8, and we're leaving by 11.
Okay, do you feel like that? I feel like I get overstimulated whenever meet with, like, it's been very good for me to do this once a week, because at the beginning of going back, not going back to normal life, but slowly, like, maybe going to a friend's house for dinner, like,
right,
I was like, God, I'm exhausted. Like, we would literally go to a friend's house for dinner, and then I'd be like, I think I talked for 3 hours straight, and I need to take the day off tomorrow.
Yeah, like, literally, that's how I feel. And, like, I was talking to my dad about it, too. Like, I've just become a homebody so much now.
Well,
and I never used to be such a homebody.
I ordered Josh a watercolor of our house.
Oh, I saw you post that.
Yeah, so that's our art teacher that painted it, Autumn.
That's so cute.
Yeah, we had that class together, too. I'm so excited to give it to him, because it's, like, I almost cried when I saw it, because I was like, this is our little place. Like, this is our little corner of the world, and it's, like, it's literally my favorite place on earth.
It's so cute.
Well, with that...
segue...
I mean, they're all upsetting, but this one, there's a kid. And it,
oh no, Hope's gonna go on her rant today.
Yeah. No, not really, because it wasn't, the kid's not the main thing. I don't know, it's just sad. So just a warning. There's also semi-cult activity.
Cult?
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
Well, e-cult, like the weird, like offshoot, like wannabe a vampire, Satanism stuff.
Ooh.
Okay, also, please guess where this is.
Here.
No.
Pikeville.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Another Pikeville.
We have...
Okay, well, that's perfect, because I'm doing a Cincinnati one today.
A hometown murder.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't happen in Pikeville. Oh. Right outside Pikeville, but the people are from Pikeville.
Oh, okay.
Waffles are ready to hear a story.
Okay, let's hear the stories.
Okay, so this week I'm going to be telling you about the Lily Lynn murders.
I've not heard this.
Okay, I have, because whenever I was only two when it happened, but I remember hearing my mom talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just kind of one of those things that literally, I mean, it shocked the conscience of how, like, terrible it is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, this whole thing unfolds in April 6th of 1997. Okay.
I think that was the sink.
That scared me to death. I thought some
diamond. I thought my computer was being possessed.
I thought a diamond was coming out of your computer.
A diamond? A diamond ate my baby.
A dingo.
I know.
That's awful. That's sad. Sorry. You didn't mean to laugh, but... okay, so wait. First of all, I watched a YouTube documentary.
Oh my God, yes. That's how I decided. I literally was like, Cincinnati murder documentary, because I was like, I want to watch something, because usually I
can't spend, read again.
I hate reading.
Okay, so in this documentary, it literally starts at, it said something so redneck and so, like, well, not, it was stereotypical, like, a lot of rednecks.
Oh, yeah.
Pikeville, Kentucky. Hillbilly heaven. That's what it said.
Hillbilly heaven?
Hillbilly heaven. And I mean, was just like, how dare you?
But is she wrong?
No.
No.
But I was just like, how dare you? But where the actual murder happens, it's off of, like, a traffic, interstate traffic rest stop.
Oh, gosh.
I couldn't think about it.
Those things are so creepy.
Yeah, they are. They are. But that happened closer to, it's called Greenville, Tennessee. It's right off of Greenville, right outside Greenville. But it's interstate rest stop 81 is where it actually happened. So.
Ew, you can still go here.
Huh?
You can still go there?
Well, the murder didn't happen there. That's where, like, you'll see. Well, it's like a here, a point A to point B. Never go to point B. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Okay, so I'm just going to start telling you the background story. So, the main, like, players in her story is this just motley crew of heathens, basically. So, you have everything that I've read or listened to or watched refers to Natasha Cornett. She was originally Natasha Wallen, but she was a high school dropout at 16, got married at 17, and was divorced within, like, a couple months. He just left her.
Oh, my God.
But don't feel bad.
Okay, for my girl also got married at 16.
Wow. That's not ideal.
No. Well, actually, she doesn't die.
Oh, is she the victim of the murderer? Don't tell me. Don't tell me.
You?
Well, mine is the bad person, so I don't...
Yeah.
She made bad choices. But, okay, so she's originally Natasha Wallen, but now she's Natasha Cornett. She's from Parkville.
Wait, like, is she related to Morgan Wallen?
Yeah, they're first cousins.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, it's his little sister. Anyways. I'm just kidding. And then the second emo weirdo in this story is Karen Powell. She's a juvenile in this motley crew.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then you have Christine Sturgill. And Christine, actually, I'll talk more about each of them in a minute. I'm just going to go through the list because they all have weird quirks.
Okay.
Christine Sturgill is also an adult. You have Joe Reisner. He's a 20-year-old, so he's an adult. Dean Mullins is an adult. And then this other piece of child garbage, his name is Jason Bryant, and he's only 14 when all this happens.
Oh, my God.
So Jason's 14 and Karen is 17. But then the rest of them range from, like, 18 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, everything that I read said that Natasha was, like, the ringleader of this group.
Okay.
So, she had a rough... I mean, I had laughed because it's just really traumatic. I don't know why I laughed. But, okay, so these are notes that I took from the documentary. Natasha's mom is in it, and she's talking about how, like, she was with, like, an abusive husband or whatever, mm-hmm. and she had a gun, and she called the police and was like, he's beat me, I don't know what to do, I've got a gun, and they're like, just do what you gotta do until we get there, we're on our way, and so she shot his arm off.
His arm off?
His arm off. She shot his arm off.
That's crazy.
And I don't know if the cheesy documentary guy that said, hillbilly heaven, I don't know if he came up with this, but he called it a shotgun divorce. You know how people say shotgun wedding?
That's wild.
I was like, okay, I'm going to give you that.
I hate it here.
But then, so Natasha, her mom's name's Madonna. She also plays somewhat of a role in this story. She's a bad parent who didn't pay attention to anything her heathen hellion child ever did. And she, like, used drugs in the house, like, sex, rock and roll, all of it in the house. And the mom didn't know, didn't care, zoned out. Like, it's tragic. Like, she tried to commit suicide at home one time, and the kid found, like, Natasha found her when she was, like, 11.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, just not an environment that a child should have ever been in. Oh, very yeah. unstable. Not that everyone that tries to commit suicide is unstable. Like, that could just be, like, an incident in their life. But, like, this woman was chronically unstable.
Right.
Not fit to have a child.
Oh, yeah.
In her custody. And there was, like, some baby daddy drama. Like, nobody really knew who Natasha's dad was. But then, like, her mom sat her down at a young age and told her, like, the guy that had been raising her as her dad wasn't her dad. And, like, told her mm-hmm. her dad was, like, a local police officer. And so she just never really knew who her dad was. And so she would joke and say, though she wasn't a child of God because she was mean and, like, bad. So she was Satan's daughter. So she, like, joked like that from an early age, which is, like...
Oh, gosh.
I mean, I don't want to say it's fine because it's not fun, but, like, most people probably don't become a murderer if they joke like that, but, like, it was just... That's a red flag.
It's kind of eerie.
Yeah, in retrospect. I mean, I think I would be horrified if my small child said that.
Yeah.
But also her mom has no indicator of what's problematic, so.
Right.
And then, so at 10, she found her mom unconscious. She had taken a bunch of sleeping pills. She was naked. She, like, called them for help, and that's the only reason why she survived. At 14, Natasha tried to kill herself. She had to do 11 days in a psych ward. Another time, she was hospitalized because of, like, bulimia. It was so severe that, like, she literally had to be hospitalized. So, like, and not that any of that makes you a murderer in any way, but just, right. I mean, she had more issues than Beau going on. Like,
yeah.
Not that it's a joke, but, like, she had a lot of heavy stuff by 10.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I thought this was funny. They interviewed a teacher in this documentary. And she was like, yeah, she wore loose clothes and army boots. She just, like, wanted to stand out. And I was like, you mean she's, like, a TikToker in 2020?
Right.
Like,
loose clothes.
Yeah, I think out of the fact that she was on heroin, ecstasy, she, like, actively said she was Satan's child. Like, those are the problem signs, not the fact that she wore loose clothes. Like,
right.
So, a little out of touch, Miss Huffman.
Yeah.
But, okay, so, and also, Natasha's best friend is Karen Powell. The way the documentary described her was, and I quote, goth glam. Which I was like, oh, that sounds fun. But then you see her and you're like, oh, it's not fun. But she's actually not, she's a pretty girl to be, like,
Hope
involved
you
should in
dress
this.
Up as goth glam.
Well, I don't know. It was a little scary. But, like, looking at her, you're like, oh, you have the potential to be a normal, pretty little girl. Why in the world are you involved in something as dark as this?
Right.
Like, you're a child. She's literally a child. She's 17.
That's crazy.
And not to, like, make her any less culpable because she's pretty. But I'm just like, you know what I mean? She just looks like a normal person. Like,
right.
If you saw her, you'd be like, oh, she's a pretty little emo. And you'd just go on. I don't know. But,
that's funny.
They said that her mom used to make her stand on a Bible for hours on end to prove that she wasn't possessed. So that's the most popular thing I've ever heard in my life.
That's crazy.
And, okay, so,
is that a thing?
I don't know. I don't know much about possession, but maybe. I don't know. Sounds legit to me. Telltale sign. What was I gonna say? Oh, her and Natasha were, like, specifically close in this group. So, they were, like, really involved in Ouija boards and, like, I think the quote from the documentary was, they were involved in the Ouija quite heavily. Like, it was
drugs.
In the Ouija quite heavily.
Have you ever done a Ouija?
No, I haven't.
Would you do it?
No, never.
Oh.
Devil stuff. I don't fool with devil stuff. Sorry. That's a hard no for me. Life's hard enough without being possessed, man.
That's true.
I can't take that.
We don't need to stir the pot.
I can't handle it anymore. But something I want to point out about the documentary is it kept talking about, like, how many Baptist churches there are in Pikeville. And I was like, you know, come think of it, there are a lot. It literally showed Josh's church, like, 6 times. And it was the same. It was, like, the most low-budget film I've ever seen in my life. It was, like, the same shot of the old man hounding out the pamphlet. They kept showing that one. They'd be like, the Baptist capital of the world. Show it. Pan to Peter hanging out the things. And it was just, like, the same thing over and over.
That's pretty funny.
But it was very informative, I'll say that.
Okay.
So if you want to hear this whole thing again, but in a cheesy narrator voice, go watch it.
That's not this?
No, I don't have a cheesy narrator voice. I have a nasally hick voice.
Nasally hick voice?
I talk like a nasally hick. Okay, so that's Natasha and Karen.
Okey-doke.
Okay. Karen's boyfriend is... he's Joe Reisner. He's a 20-year-old. So, he's an adult in this situation. He's the oldest one in this situation. There'll be more about him later. And then you have Christine Sturgill and Dean Mont. So Dean is Natasha's boyfriend.
Okay.
Christine is another very troubled person. In all of this, she seems the least culpable. But at the same time, it's, I guess, why, like, complicity is a law, even though I'm kind of against it.
Yeah.
But I think she was kind of, most of the time, there's one thing that makes me think she's more involved than just sitting there. But really, she had a hard life, and she found a group of people that was weird and as her and yeah. had as troubled past as she did. And she fit in because she didn't have, like, she went to go stay with Natasha because her mom just, like, let kids be there all the time. Because she was, like, really withdrawn and reported to her school that her stepdad had been, like, raping her for years.
Oh, my gosh.
And they did an investigation, and he admitted to it. And then her family got mad at her. And then there was really nothing they could do about it because she's 18. I don't know why. I don't know how.
Oh, that's crazy.
And then her family, like, turned her back on her and kicked her out.
Yeah.
And because she's 18, it wasn't like there was a lot of support for her.
Right, right.
And so that's how she ended up. Natasha kind of took her in at her wing. So Natasha was very good at, like, finding these weird kids and, like, grooming them, basically.
Yeah.
And it makes you think she's, like, so much older, but she's just, like, their age or a year older.
Right.
But it's almost like she knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, yeah. So, and then Dean Mullins, he kind of connected Christina and Natasha. He's Natasha's boyfriend, but he was like, oh, my friend Natasha, like, her mom lets everybody stay at her house. You can go stay there. And then the last one is Jason Bryant. Like I said, he's much younger. He's only 14. I don't really know how he became involved with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, 20 to 14, that's 6 years. Like,
right.
But he was a heathen. They said that he started drinking at age 3. And what? Was on drugs by the time he was 9.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, he came from a broken home. He was just, he was no good from day one.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Like, that sounds awful, but, like,
that's
frontal lobe was not even there.
Yeah, not even a chance.
No. So, on April 5th, 1997, this group of degenerates, they're at a local motel in Pikeville, Coley Motel, and they're partying it up, you know, having a big time. They're in a motel room where a man killed himself because they wanted to have a seance.
What?
Yeah. They specifically picked a room where someone had committed suicide to do a seance.
That's stressing me out.
Yes. And they had, like, partied and messed up the hotel room. They'd, like, set it on fire. They tried to burn 666 into the carpet.
What?
They're just like, what's the most Satan thing you can think of? Let's go do it on a carpet. Pee that into the wall. Like,
wow.
They're just freaking stupid.
Yeah.
It, like, it reminds you, like, when people get really heavy into a band and they buy all the band stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, they buy all the t-shirts, they buy the notebooks. Like, that's what they did with, like, a cult in Satanism. They just, like, wanted to wear all the swag and wear black lipstick and be like, I'm the devil.
Yeah.
But, like, really, they're just a bunch of losers.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah, me too. So, then they, like, sobered up a little bit, and they're like, oh my god, we wrecked this room. So, they're further in trouble. So, Natasha hatched a plan to run away. And originally, she picked New Orleans because she had been to New Orleans before. She kind of, like, lived on the streets there for about a month one time. But she got raped while she was living on the streets in New Orleans. So she said that she wouldn't go back without a gun. So that's why they ended up getting guns, allegedly. But
that is, like, such, like, not a natural, like, we wrecked this hotel room. Guess we have to move somewhere 1,000 miles away.
You know what that means? You know what that decision is?
What?
Drugs.
Yeah.
Don't do drugs.
Don't do
drugs. I don't know if it was Karen or Georgia, but on My Favorite Murder, one of them said, every plan is a bad plan. Like, when you're on drugs, any plan is a bad plan. Don't do it.
Nope.
But they also wanted to go to New Orleans because they wanted to meet with Anne Rice, who is the author of, like, these vampire books that they liked.
Yeah.
And so to tie in vampires, Karen and Natasha, the two, like...
friends.
Yeah. Christine's also a girl in the group, but she's not really involved in a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they would, like, cut each other and drink each other's blood.
Why?
That just says hepatitis, AIDS, all kinds of nastiness to me. Not, you're not nasty if you have those things, but it's nasty to do that.
Right.
Know?
Oh, yeah.
But, like, it's just, it leads to a lot of unsanitary... Just don't ever do that.
Yeah.
My God. And in this nasty flea bite motel, and, like, what instrument do you... Like, there's so many concerns.
We gotta move on.
So many concerns. That's the most freaking weird thing I've ever heard in my life. If you're at a level where you're doing weird stuff like that, check into psyche... And I'm not making fun of it. But, like, if that's normal in your brain, you need... Something's going on. Like, the fact that people were sitting around watching them do this and not... Like, that just shows how cracked out of it all of them were. But they just acted like that was normal.
That is so, like, beyond it.
I just don't understand. Was it a different time? Like, was the vampire, like, panic that everybody's obsessed with it that big of a deal, that people really believe, like, you logically thought you were a vampire? You're insane.
Oh, God.
I don't understand.
That's so strange.
But so, they're like, oh, God, we gotta go. We gotta go to New Orleans because we messed up this hotel room. Whatever reason. So, like I said, Natasha's like, gotta get a gun. So, they went to Karen Powell's house and stole a 25 automatic gun. And then they also, I don't remember from where, but they also stole a 9mm gun.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joe Reisner, the 20-year-old, he was like a community and technical college student. And so he told his mom that it was spring break. He told his mom it was spring break and he needed to borrow the car to go on like spring break with his friends. And she was like, okay. So she let him borrow her Chevy Citation. So, this group of geeks and freaks head to New Orleans, and they make it about 80 miles away to that rest stop.
Yeah.
Rest stop 81 in Greenville. I don't know, maybe like right outside Greenville. And that is where, like, fate crosses with the Lilywood family.
Okay.
So, pause and let's talk about the Lilywood family. So, the Lilywoods were Vidar, the dad, Delphina, the mom, Peter, and Tabitha. So, Vidar is from Norway.
Okay, I was going to say.
A little different name, yeah. Delphina is, she's from New Jersey, and she's born to Honduran parents.
Oh, okay.
They met, because he immigrated to the United States, and they met in Miami, where she was living with her family. And they fell in love, got married, but then once they started having kids and stuff, they decided to move away from Miami to get away from the crime.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved to Knoxville, Tennessee. They either moved to Knoxville or Johnson City, because I get that part confused, because they were on their way home. So Vidar walks up to, so like, the girls had went to the bathroom, the boys were like, I don't know where the boys were, but then Delphina and Tabitha were also in the bathroom and had just, like, talked to Karen and Natasha, like, exchanged, like, whatever.
Yeah.
And Tabitha, like, tried to give Karen and Natasha Hershey kisses because she's just, like, a sweet little friendly girl.
Aww.
Yeah. And so Vidar asks Natasha, do you believe in God?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no. And he's like, prods a little bit more, and she said something like, he never answered her prayers or something, which is really sad. Like, the psychology of that's really sad, because she did have a really terrible life.
Yeah.
But it's like, there's also a lot of people who have really terrible lives, and they can still be religious or not be religious, but they also aren't murderers.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry for child her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But not anymore. He, like, gets to talking to him, and she was the one that, in the car, had said, we need to steal their van, because they drove, like, a big, like, it's not a minivan, they had, like, a big van.
Mm-hmm.
And it was older and stuff, but, like, their family of four, it was just more practical, and Natasha had said to Karen, like, we need to steal that van, and so everybody knew the plan was to steal their van. They had these guns and stuff. Well, so Joe starts talking to Vidar about religion and is, like, going along with it, acting like he's, like, buying into it.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, like, Vidar and his family are, like, at the picnic area. And Joe's like, I'm sorry to do this, but, like, whatever. Like, gets the guns out and is like, some of them go in the van with Vidar and his family, the Lulud family, and then, Dean and Christine are still in the Chevy Citation car. And so they, like, go down the road a little bit, and I don't know who, but, like, Joe or one of them, like, says, okay, we're going to go off into this road, and it's called Paint Hollow. And he gets them out and, like, lines them up. And in the car, Tabitha, before they get out, is, like, crying and stuff, and they're, like, make her shut up and, like, freaking out.
Yeah.
Which, like, right there tells you, like, this isn't going to end well. Like, they can't handle it. Like, they're already, like, you know, you always hear people, it's like, if some violent crime thing ever happens to you, like, stay calm and calm them down.
Right.
Like, that's your best case of survival, usually. Yeah. And it's, like, a child crying, like, flipped them out so much and, like, made them be violent.
Yeah.
Even more. Like, that's just not a good start to the story.
Yeah.
And so, he, like, once they get down to, like, a more secluded spot off this dead-end road, he, like, orders them out of the car, and they're, like, lined up in front of a ditch. And Tabitha's, like, crying again because, like, they're yelling and, like, being hateful and stuff.
Yeah.
And she's, like, six, so she's, like, just old enough to kind of understand. But Peter's, like, laughing and smiling because he's only two. And he, like, has no idea what's going on, obviously. And so, Vidar, Delfina, and Tabitha are, like, facing them. But Peter's two, so somebody's holding him. I think Delfina might be holding him.
Yeah.
And so his back is, like, turned to him. But they obviously already have the keys to the van and everything, so they could have just left him there. Right. So, Natasha's side of the story is that Jason looks at Joe and is like, what do? Do we let him go or do we kill him? Mm. And Joe says, I don't know, man. And that Natasha, this is Natasha telling us, that she goes and gets in front of him and she's like, don't hurt the children. Just don't hurt the children. And that Vidar says, if you kill us, like, you're hurting our children. Like, don't hurt any of us, basically.
Right.
Which is, like, a bold tactic. Because it's, like, they're either going to be like, well, y'all go, or none of you go. And they're already probably leaning towards y'all go. So, I don't know. But, I mean, obviously, none of this is his fault. But I'm just saying, like, that is, like, a very logical thing to say. But it's also, like, that didn't resonate well with him. But, so, after, like, a second of deliberation, he just starts firing and shoots them all. Well, then he says that, or Natasha says, then she saw, after all the shots were fired, she saw Tabitha standing over Delfina. So, the little girl standing over her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And that Jason freaked out and was like, they're not effing dead. And runs back and gets the 9mm. So, he just shot everybody with the 25.
Yeah.
They're not dead. So the same guy goes back to the car, gets the 9mm, goes back. All of this is time to stop him if you're truly against this plan.
Right.
And shoots them all again.
Oh, my God.
All, every single person. So there was, like, a total of 17 shots. And, like, people nearby heard it, and so they called the sheriff. But by that point, the teens left the Chevy Citation. They took the license plate off of it, but they left the Chevy Citation, and they went in the Lilith's van.
Yeah.
And so at this point, they're like, switch track. And they decide to go to Mexico instead of New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so, okay, so something else that the documentary pointed out is they removed the license plate, but they left the VIN number.
Right.
And there was a, like, a receipt to somewhere in Pikeville. So it's really easy to realize that this is, like, somebody from Pikeville's car.
Yeah.
And it's not that far. It's, like, 80 miles.
Right.
So the cops are called, like, pretty much immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's found. Tabitha's still alive and Peter's still alive.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. A 2-year-old and a 6-year-old. After they've been shot, all of them, a total of 17 times. So they, like, life flight the kids. Vidar and Delfina are already dead. But Tabitha then passes away the next day.
Oh.
Yeah. But the good news is Peter does live.
Wow.
Yeah, he lost an eye and...
Oh my gosh.
I know. And he had, like, spinal injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And at first they were like, oh, he's not gonna be able to walk. They thought he was gonna be paralyzed. But he can walk. Nowadays, he, from, like, what I read most recently, like, he walks around his house just fine, like... But it might be more of, like, a stability thing and, like, getting tired, I think. Because when he goes out, he uses his wheelchair. So, maybe, like, he when he's not used to the terrain or, like, things like that. So, he can walk. It's just easier for him to use a chair. It's
right.
Because, you know, he does still have very serious injuries. But when the police are at the scene, they notice, like I said, the car without the license plate. And they also noticed that the bodies are laid out in cross formation. So, each parent had a kid laying across them.
Oh, God.
So it's almost like they're placed that way, like symbolism.
Yeah.
But this is debated. The kids act like, or the teenagers act like that never happened. But the police, like, that's their official report.
Yeah.
So, but you also have to remember, this is in 1997, like, satanic panic. And I'm not taking their side, but I just don't know that I believe that, because after they shot them all, Joe Reisner is now driving the minivan.
Mm-hmm.
And he claims he's just in such shock and panic, and he doesn't know what's going on, because he just watched Jason shoot all these people. He accidentally runs over the bodies. So if you perfectly arranged them, and then you ran over them and left, they wouldn't still be perfectly arranged. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, I don't know. I just think that might be a little bit satanic panicky.
Yeah.
They also tried to say that, like they did, when they did autopsies, they noticed that Bedard had, like, 3 bullet holes that were in a triangle shape. And that Delfina also had 3 bullet holes that were in a triangle shape. But, I don't know. They tried to say it looked like a pentagram. And I'm like, I don't even think any of those people had enough brain cells to put that together to shoot one on one side and one on the other to make a pentagram. You know what I mean?
No, no.
They were just shooting. Like, none of them were that good of a shot that they could make art
right.
out of it. Like,
right.
I think that was definitely just like,
Woo.
I don't know what the word is. Like, just for, it was panic, basically.
Yeah.
But, okay, so they track the car back to Joe's mom because they have the VIN number. And Joe Bryant's dad actually reported it to his probation officer when he left, because he wasn't
mm-hmm.
supposed to be going out of state.
Yeah.
So there was already like, uh-oh, he's up to no good
mm-hmm.
out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the witness who heard the gunshots swears that he heard kids laughing. So that feeds into they enjoyed it. All of them were involved.
Yeah.
It wasn't just one flip shot them on. They were all had to be complicit so they didn't get hurt.
Right.
Goes against that narrative.
Oh, yeah.
So then, okay, so like I said, they're going to Mexico now. That's their escape
mm-hmm.
plan. So on April 8th, so this happened on April 6th and they're caught by April 8th. They're arrested at the Arizona-Mexico border in the Lily Lids van, and every single one of them has a trophy with them, like a souvenir.
Oh.
So, Natasha has a photo of Tabitha and Vidar. Karen Powell has Peter's social security card. Christine has the keys to the house. So,
ew.
Christine is the one that I thought was, like, the least involved and all
yeah.
that, then why do you have a souvenir?
Yeah.
So, like, they try to play her up as, like, this sweet, innocent girl who just, like, was wrong place, wrong time. Well, why did you enjoy killing a child so much that you kept souvenir to remember it?
Yeah.
Sounds weird to me. Yeah, I don't know. But, okay, so they're arrested. They, like, extradite them back to Tennessee. And Tennessee is, like, ready to, like, do some, like, vigilante justice. Like, they're
yeah.
ready to kill these people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a restaurant, like, on the way to, like, the town that had 6 nooses hanging outside.
Ew.
Yeah. Because, like, they wanted these people dead.
Wow.
I mean, they killed a child. They tried
yeah.
to kill 2 kids. Like,
yeah.
I understand where the anger and the hate
yeah.
came from.
Yeah. It's just, like, wow.
It's very scary.
Yeah.
But, so, everybody gets on this bandwagon, this story of, it was all Jason, we don't know, we were just there, we told him not
mm-hmm.
to do it. But that just, like I said, it doesn't really seem legit, because how's he going to shoot them all once, go back, get another gun, come back,
right.
shoot them all again?
Right.
I don't know. Plus the laughing, which witness testimony, eyewitness is like, even though this isn't this is sound, but it's the same
yeah.
theory, like,
yeah.
most unreliable. But if there's any value to that, it's like, yeah, I don't feel sorry for you. Plus the trophy thing,
I
can't feel sorry
yeah.
for you now.
I don't trust that.
So everybody besides Jason and Karen are adults. So the kind of the theory behind why everybody said it was Jason was, it's believable because he's crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, basically doesn't even have a frontal lobe. He's
mm-hmm.
so crazy. He's been on drugs forever, no thought process. He's known to be violent. Like, it checks out he might have been the one that did some of the shooting.
Yeah.
So they blame it on him because he can't get the death penalty because juveniles can't be given the death penalty.
Yeah.
So he says, no, that's not true. I didn't shoot him.
Right.
So he acts like it wasn't him. But, so, They're all, like, decide that they want to be tried together. Or, like, the court decides to try them all together. Oh, yeah. Same case. Like, I don't know. It just, it's more effective that, like, they did it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just better to do it that way. But, like, they end up doing a plea deal to first-degree murder because it took the death penalty off the table. But it was contingent on all or nothing. Everybody had to take it or nobody got it. And everybody that was over 18 or 18 and above could get death penalty. So, I don't know how they got everybody to agree with it, because it's, like, for Karen and Jason, like, what are you gaining from that?
Right.
You're agreeing to life without the possibility of parole, and, like, sentencing-wise, that's not even really what you, would normally ever get, so it's, like, why would you agree to that? But for whatever reason, they did, but they still let them do, present evidence and testify at sentencing, because I don't think at this point they realized that they would get... Like, I don't think they, I know this is awful, but I don't think they really understood the terms of their plea deal, because why would you go up there and testify before sentencing if you knew what your sentence already was? Like, they,
right.
It seemed like they were trying to, like, look remorseful, like, Natasha fake cried with no tears, and, like, one of the attorneys put Dean Mullen's dad up there because he was actually remorseful and was like, I'm so sorry, I can't believe my child's part of this, like... Yeah. Truly felt terrible.
Yeah.
But they all still got life, the possibility of parole. And Jason's dad actually ended up killing himself in his front yard because he just ruined his life. Like, he...
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, your child violently murdered a child and two adults.
Yeah.
And almost another child. So, I mean, he just couldn't cope with the fact that, like, that's his monster.
Yeah.
But Tennessee now has a law that juveniles can't get life without the possibility of parole. So... Karen and Jason have, like, filed appeals and things, but they've all failed.
Yeah.
So, I guess technically they now have life with the possibility of parole, but they're never gonna get out.
Right.
They're in the town where everyone wants to see them dead.
Yeah.
And they're mad as heck that they're not dead.
Yeah.
So, after the fact, Peter... So, Delphina's family and Vidar's family, like, petition for custody, and they, like, kind of had a custody battle over him. The court ended up deciding that he needed to just go live with Vidar's family.
Mm-hmm.
He said he moved to Sweden just to get away. I mean, this back in the day, I think it was, like, a very well-known story, and it's like, you don't want to be reminded of that for the rest of your life.
No.
But thankfully, Peter says that he doesn't remember any of it. He was only two at the time.
Right.
So thank God he doesn't remember it. But he lives with his aunt in Sweden, and she, to honor his dad and mom, is raising him as a Jehovah's Witness. Like, they were so, like, passionate about.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, and so, so by all accounts, I mean, Peter seems to be doing as well as he possibly could be under the circumstances.
Yeah.
He's come back to Tennessee a couple times, and he's, like, announced it to the press a time or two so he could do follow-up stories.
Yeah.
Because people, like, I mean, people rally behind these kids, and, like,
oh yeah,
because it's like, I don't, he's, like, orphaned, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's just the worst thing you can imagine, and it's, like, even worse that they were just trying to be, like, it doesn't matter what the religion is, like, they were just trying to share faith with people.
Right, right.
I mean, it could be Jewish, Muslim, whatever, like, if someone's just trying to share what they believe will literally save your soul with you,
right,
and you kill them, like, they're trying to do the most compassionate thing they can do for you. And it's, like, I think everybody just was riled up and religious and was like, mm-mm, we don't stand for that.
We're gonna fight you.
But, everybody seems to be doing okay in prison, I guess. But Natasha got in more trouble. Not that you can really get in more, because she's already, like, off that possibility.
Yeah.
Girl. It's not a, she didn't get sentenced to death, but that's a death sentence.
Right.
But she got in more trouble because she, like, helped an inmate friend try to kill someone on death row.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it just... points to the fact that, like, oh, she's not this innocent.
No, no, definitely not.
But, yeah, I don't know. She just seems to be... She also seems... I hate that smart's not the right word, but, like...
Manipulative?
Manipulative, and, like clearly she manipulated all these people into being a part of her weird...
Oh, yeah.
...dark web of friends.
Yeah.
And she had some control over them. But it's, like, criminally smart. Like,
yeah.
She just... I don't know. I do believe that she played a more active role. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But, so. I don't know. It's just the most awful story.
Well, similarly to your story, my perpetrator gets married at 16. Linda gets married to Walter Couch. They met at a wedding. And a couple, under a year later, they got married. So, yeah. So that's just concerning how young they got married. Of course, this was, kind of the times. Back in the early 80s, especially among some, lower educated and communities where that was typical. So if her parents got married young, if her siblings were getting married young, she was too. So even if that makes sense, here at Time to Crime, we do recommend that you get to know your significant other before you married them, because you never know when you get married. Like, they could literally be a social killer. Same thing.
Guilty as charged. That was cool.
So by the time that they'd been married for about 5 years, they had 3 kids. They got in an argument one night, and it was pretty normal to have their spats, but the kids were out of town, and Linda was like, "Hey, I want to talk to you about something. I really want to go to nursing school and have a career and stuff. I'm still young. I still can make a difference, yada yada." And Walter would not have it. He was so mad and was not down with it. And some of the stuff that Walter was saying was what do you need? You don't need to have a career. I make plenty of money. We don't need you to be working. We need you to be home with the kids. He had actually just gotten the deed of the house transferred into his name from his parents. And that was kind of just a family hand-me-down. This conversation, although might have seemed like it could have had a logical end, it unfortunately ended very badly. Linda killed her husband. She claims to this day it's an act of self-defense after he went after a gun and she was able to get it from him and shoot him. Yeah, I know. However, things do not add up, and this is kind of why she is still in prison and the self-defense was never taken. When she pleaded the self-defense, she did not include a lot of these details that are mostly in the Netflix documentary I Am a Killer, and we're not really sure why this was the case, but we do know that it has no difference in terms of her parole and her charge that she currently has. So there was a lot of things wrong with her story. As mentioned, there was a huge issue with the deed to the house. A couple days prior to the kids going out of town and this deadly conversation for Walter, she actually had the deed changed to her name, and it was not done so conventionally.
Pretty cool.
She cut the paper and then was able to paste and glue it back together so that it looked like it was just her name. Yeah, exactly. So there is some sketchiness about her sending the kids to the grandparents, but we don't really know anything about if that was a regular thing, what was the reasoning. The grandparents were still in the area, so it's not super they went to Florida all the way from here. So the other main thing was the forensics. So the gun, which was actually purchased a week before by Linda.
Guilty!
Yeah, does not help at all. Based on the forensics, Linda's statement doesn't add up because he was essentially shot execution style. Literally. So no one will know what happened that night except for Linda, but it's less and less like a self-defense piece.
I don't have a brain.
Yeah, she really don't, though. Instead of contacting the police as soon as this happened or even the next morning, she buried him in the backyard. This is probably what makes her argument so faulty.
Duh.
And again, many of these self-defense things that come up, such as her being assaulted and abused by him and his friends, all come out now in this I Am a Killer documentary. And obviously I would never dispute what someone says, and maybe at that time she just wasn't comfortable. that was, you know, people didn't talk about assault the way they do now, and the way they do now isn't perfect either. So because of that, it does play a role in determining her innocence. Back to burying Walter in the backyard. Much like a previous case we've discussed, she actually had her kids help. She dragged Walter's body through the house in a carpet, rolled up carpet, and her father-in-law, so Walter's dad, actually helped dig the hole. She told him that she wanted to do some gardening and need all the soil turned up. This happened while Walter was dead.
Yikes!
And when asked where Walter was, she just told everyone that he just left out of the blue.
Mind your business.
None of your beeswax, buddy. But yeah, this is when she gets guilty. Walter's dad started getting curious, and after she had buried Walter with the help of his kids, she had her father-in-law come over, and he was suspicious and started digging towards things, and that's when he realized what was in that hole that he had buried. The police came, and Linda was right away arrested, and to this day, the prosecution, one of the prosecutors who is now a county judge, talks about the case and how he still stands by it and believes that it was the right verdict. So in cases like this, it's super tricky because there's so many things that say, well, wait a minute, maybe this was self-defense. And self-defense is such a tricky charge in of itself because it's unfair to victims who are not being abused in the exact moment that they kill their abuser. So that's how it goes back and forth, and the law is not designed to help people in that situation. So because of that, it really impacted her case, as well as these further things coming out years and years later after her trial. And even in the documentary, one of her daughters, Roxanne, corroborates everything she's saying. She remembers her mom getting pushed down the stairs when she was pregnant with her younger siblings. She remembers her dad whipping her excessively with a belt and then not even flinching when the other siblings did the worst of worse. So even through this, there's been no success upon appeal, and Linda is still in prison to this day. Her daughter Roxanne actually moved to Africa, probably to escape a lot of this. Even the younger siblings are not featured. Their faces are blurred out, everything in the documentary. So there's clearly some familial shame going on here. But Roxanne does believe that her mom is guilty and should be serving time.
That was cool.
And she says that she misses her dad and that it was unfair for her mom to take away that from her. And throughout the documentary, it's kind of just interesting to see, like, how hard it is for her daughter, Roxanne, to kind of divide the abuse that she suffered from her father, as the story goes, via Linda, but then also at the same time be so angry with her mother. And that's something that, to me, was the most moving part of the documentary, because clearly that sort of mental shift is really challenging for someone who has been abused and who has been manipulated from a very young age. Of course, I think society is a little bit more lenient when it comes to women killing their abusers versus men. So for all we know, you know, Walter could have been a complete angel in determining who should have died in the situation, or if Linda should be serving out time, is just based on the facts that we do have. So this kind of blurriness is just something to consider whenever you hear cases of self-defense or abuse within the family and things like that. It definitely brings you into a broader discussion than you probably planned on thinking about, but definitely helps us appreciate the resources that we do have, whether it be due to where you live, what kind of car you drive, or your ability to communicate within the community and get those resources. So I do, again, apologize for the problems with recording.
I don't have a brain.
As well as the delay, holiday season is crazy. So I will put some great bloopers here at the end from my loops that I've saved over the episodes. If anything, I think I've figured out that I need to save even more loops. So hopefully those are coming your way at your next episode. But yeah, so thank you guys so much for listening. As you know, it is
time to crumb.
Time to cry! We both did it at the same time!
Make sure to follow us on Instagram at time2crimepodcast and email us any suggestions that you have. Time to crime. We always will have our details in our bios, and we cannot wait to record another episode for you guys. Have a great day!
Why these people are like,
these classes just talk a lot or something?
We save the clips for no time.
We save these for bloopers, like a Patreon like episode. Bloop, 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 bloop. Whenever you decide to start giving us your monies or something.
Yeah, or we can do it for if we don't feel like it.
We got like sick day or something?
Yeah.
That's our insurance. This is our insurance.
This is insurance.
That's also Wiggly Wobbison reporting for duty.
What up?
Okay, so from the top again.
Meow!
I'm just kidding.
Oh, my lamp just turned off.
I don't know what that means. Talk real slow.
We are losers.
Yeah.
Happily, deppily, doodily.
Yeah, that's right.
Hello, podcast world.
You're a dick. That's gonna be so loud. Oh, it's locked in here.
I'm so sorry. I mean, shit, y'all better support.